lined up and all of that resolved, because it's tonight at 7 Eastern Time at monkdebates.com/live. Monk, M-U-N-K, debates.com/live. And I've been trying to tell y'all, you should listen to my show, because I've been warning you, don't pick a fight with Glenn Greenwald, because he's more better, smarter arguer than you, and he's going to kick your ass, dude. And then now, so Michael Hayden, on whose watch 9/11 happened, is going to think he can take on Glenn Greenwald. All those consolidate all state power in the East, and then how far do you think they can go before provoking a Russian invasion in response?
Well, that's the 64 ruble question. President Putin, you notice that our president, Obama, now does not refer to President Putin as President Putin anymore. He's been downgraded to Mr. Putin. And as things get worse, he'll be calling him plain old Putin.
Way back before the Crimea part of the crisis, that gave him the authority to decide that very thing, right? Just the same kind of American style, not quite declaration of war, but authorization to use military force.
That's right. There, even in the Kiev government, there are mixed feelings about starting a civil war inside Ukraine. You know, this is not about today alone. It's also about yesterday.
Supposed to listen to him as the paragon of knowledge and reason and methodical planning. Why, he even wrote a book with chess in the title, so that's pretty smart.
Yes, I read it. I have great respect.
He's saying now, arm up the Ukrainians, that if the Russians, I guess he figures there's going to be an invasion, and that, of course, the Ukrainian military won't be able to repel it, but so we need to give them, I guess, the kind of weapons we're given the Syrian rebels, anti-tank weapons and shoulder-fired rockets and light arms and this kind of thing. And that, if he says that, does that mean that's now the consensus centrist realist position in American foreign policy, Eric?
I'm afraid it may be. I have great respect for Brzezinski. He's one of the best foreign policy minds in Washington. I've interviewed him.
He fights with the neocons about Israel and Iran issues.
That's right. He's one of the few people who has the guts to stand up to the neocons in Washington. But when it comes to Russia, like so many Poles, Brzezinski sort of sees red, and his clear, cold, logical thinking seems to vanish, and he's so anti-Russian. He just wants revenge on the Russians. But the thing is, you can't arm the Ukrainians fast enough, and you can't train military forces. It's a modern war. It takes a lot of technical and training input. You can't just throw some arms at them as it was done in Syria and said, go out and create trouble. It won't happen quickly, but you're right. There is the potential to create a Syrian-style mess, where there are different armed gangs running around shooting at each other.
Well, and he calls it a deterrent, right? We want to keep him from invading, and the way to keep him from invading is to set up a protracted guerrilla, asymmetric warfare problem for him to dissuade him from even going forward. But, of course, that just means if he calls that bluff and goes anyway, then there's going to be a protracted guerrilla war.
Well, interestingly enough,
not that he has the right to win necessarily, but we see what's going on in Syria, where Assad's going to win anyway, but only after America helped drag the thing out for Al-Qaeda and get hundreds of thousands extra people killed first.
And destroy Syria completely.
And destroy the whole nation, exactly.
But, armed groups, let's step back into the late 1930s and 1940s. When the U.S. Was secretly supporting Ukrainian nationalist groups who were fighting the Russians. And it took the Russians a good 10 years to stamp them out and to assassinate all their leaders in the Western Ukraine. This is documented in a wonderful book called Special Tasks, by the Soviet KGB General Pavel Sudoplatov, who was the man who assassinated Trotsky, too. He was in charge of wiping out the Ukrainian nationalist bands. But today's politicians in Kiev hark straight back to those 1940s and 50s nationalist bands led by Stefan Bandera, for example. And that's why I was saying there's the reopening of these old wounds.
Right. Yeah, it's... I was talking about this before. Sorry, audience, for repeating myself, but it seems like kind of a thing where, you know, we have Republicans and Democrats in America who libertarians can't really tell the dime's worth the difference between them, but they hate each other like mad, and they call each other commie and Nazi, but what they really mean is conservative and liberal. But over there, you have actual Nazis in the streets, and you have actual people waving red Soviet flags and saying they want the old USSR back. And so imagine the hard feelings there when it's the Nazis versus the commies, like from back during World War II. And as you say, they're proudly declaring their loyalty to the legacy of Bandera. That's what they're marching for. In fact, according to RT, anyway, they had some footage out on Holocaust Day. They went out and had a Nazi march in Western Ukraine.
There are neo-Nazis in Western Ukraine for sure, but there are also a lot in Russia too. These skinhead groups and things in Moscow. So
yeah,
it's a common problem. But there's been great exaggeration when the Russians claim that all the people in Kiev, in the Kiev government, are Nazis. They're not. There are a lot of extreme hardline right-wingers in the government, just as there are in Israel's government, too. The Russians are making hay with this. And it's funny, you know, watching the huge May Day celebration yesterday in Moscow gave me a warm, fuzzy feeling. As an old Cold Warrior myself, I had a great sense of nostalgia and singing the International, people marched. There were no tanks yesterday, unfortunately. I used to like those and the missiles.
I thought you were going to say that was the good part. It was a big party without all the militarism.
It was a big party. You know, and as I travel in Western Europe, where I just was 2 weeks ago, I see all these Russian tourists around. I said, this is great. We should encourage the Russians to party and have a good time. Spend on clothing, spend on foreign travel, rather than spending on tanks and scaring the bejesus out of us like they used to. You know, and unfortunately, we're pushing them back in the other direction, the old direction.
Yeah. Well, I blame Alan Greenspan and the central bankers for the boom and the bust more than anything. When I hear people, not just in Russia or even bordering Russia, but just Eastern Europeans in general, missing the old USSR, I have to put full responsibility for that on the Americans, for letting them down for the future that they thought they were going to get when it ended, that we betrayed them and stole from them. But anyway, we got to take this stupid break. We'll be right back with Eric Margulies in just a sec.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Eric Margulies, author of War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. Of course, he writes at ericmargulies.com, lewrockwell.com, unz.com, that's UNZ, unz.com. And so we're talking about Ukraine issues here. And I just want to make clear, too, the dang hard breaks, they ruin everything. I didn't mean that America owed all of the former Soviet republics and occupied states, membership in NATO and America's free trade umbrella necessarily, or this, that, the other kind of thing. I just meant not booming and busting and destroying the world economy over and over again so that nobody can ever get ahead for a minute before they get the rug pulled out from under them. And you wonder why people miss the Soviet Union. They had a crappy house, but at least they had a place to sleep at night, you know, under Khrushchev or whoever they're reminiscing about there. So you know, that's the part I blame on the Americans, the keepers of the world reserve currency. And I don't know if you want to comment on my rant there at all, Eric, or if you want to move on or move back to events on the ground in Ukraine now.
Well, I'd like to say I agree with you entirely that Alan Greenspan and the politicians who he was working with destabilized the entire world economy, and it's caused tremendous political stress and troubles, as we've seen all over. They still roil on. These people who created money for nothing are still doing it. It still goes on with quantitative easing. So we can blame Alan Greenspan, but we haven't gotten over the evil that this man created. And coming back to Ukraine, what's interesting, if I were the Russians, I would really want the West to take over the care and feeding of Ukraine.
Yeah.
It's a economic black hole. It's a totally failed state. The last Ukrainian finance minister said they would need $35 billion just to right the ship, stop it from sinking. We see the International Monetary Fund, which is an arm of American foreign policy, is now lending them $17 billion, which is the money which is never going to be paid back. So maybe it's one of these Gaston Alphonse things, after you. No, after you, because
right.
Who wants it?
That crafty old KGB Putin, he's three times, he's four steps ahead on the chessboard compared to Zbigniew Brzezinski. He's just trying to trick us into picking up that whole tab. That's all this whole thing's about.
That's a scary thought. It's a really scary thought.
He lured Victoria Nuland into doing a coup d'etat in Kiev. Oh, and by the way, on the point about the Nazis, I don't know what they're saying on RT because I don't watch RT, but... And I'm sure that they're completely full of it. But at least in the West, the critics who are complaining about the Nazi involvement in the coup, I don't think anyone was saying that they got the top ministry positions. They were just saying that it was their seizure of the buildings after the cops pulled back on the night of the 21st that basically allowed for the coup to really be successful. And now they're being integrated into the new National Guard, which I guess means they didn't have much of an army, so they created a new one made out of these right sector thugs. And I don't know, the BBC's got one of the kids on tape. He's not the leader or anything, but he seemed like he was pretty representative of the group, saying, you know, we just, we want a clean country, that's all. I mean, not like Hitler. Well, a little like Hitler. And of course, my wife's Ukrainian, a Ukrainian Jew, and I had her translate, like double check the translation. And she says, yeah, that's pretty much what he said, you know, a little like Hitler.
Well, there are a lot of people like that, you know. And what I find interesting, and this is pretty deep stuff, but talking about old animosities, there are the hatred between the Poles and the Ukrainians is now bursting out, and they're all, you know, we're getting a kaleidoscopic travel. Tour of the 1930s problems in Eastern Europe, which had been forgotten long ago. Yeah. Now we're back on the Polish-Ukrainian things, mm-hmm. and their claims that the Poles have stirred up the Ukrainians and been training these right-wing, right-sector Ukrainian people. There are border disputes between the two. You know, it's Silesia, which used to be German, this whole area. Or certainly German-dominated, and we're waiting for the Germans now to get mixed up into this mess as well.
Man, and so this really does go back to Greenspan and the boom and bust there in the post-Cold War world, because, you know, the curse of the old world, obviously, and you tell me, you're the boss, all this stuff, man, is all this ethno-nationalism and the fact that over the, you know, since the age of exploration and all of that, there are no ethnically pure areas anywhere. There's always people stuck on the wrong side of the lines if you have to draw a line around this or that tribe. And so then that means those people's rights are then, you know, up for grabs. And as long as people are going to just keep fighting over where those lines should be drawn, then it's going to be the end of mankind, because the technology now is too good for these kinds of disputes. But then, so how do you paper over these kinds of ancient differences? Prosperity. That's how you do it. Trade.
Right.
And so what does America do? They blow up a giant bubble, and then they blow it up. And then they blow up a giant bubble, and then they blow it up. And so all of, you know, these ancient, as you call them, well, not that ancient, but these problems that have been under the surface now come to the surface because people are desperate. And so, wait a minute, why are any of my tax dollars going to your people again? And now all of a sudden it's we and they and us and them and all this crap. And so, and it is the dollar. It's not the British pound that is the reserve currency. It's the Federal Reserve policy that has done this to the world economy and, for example, Eastern Europe, and just led to, I'm sure you can name 100 more, the Transdniester, which I'll never be able to say right even after the nuclear war, Moldova, and in all the Balkans, still people want to fight over Kosovo, right? Serbs in Kosovo, and on and on and on.
And this gives me the opportunity to bring up the three missing bees in Eastern Europe, the Banat, Bukovina, and Bessarabia.
Oh, man.
These were areas of enormous conflict in the 19th century. They've been absorbed more or less now into Romania or Russia, but we're very close now to these old fragmented zones of different ethnicities, the cradle of Jewish European civilization as well. I'm expecting these problems to rear their ugly heads soon, too.
Man. All right, now, so let me get back to, we're short on time. I'm sorry I talked too damn much, Eric. Let me get back to this thing that you brought up about Putin just treating, America's Putin, Barack Obama, treating Vladimir Putin with such blatant disrespect and all of that kind of thing. Now, I know that there's politics and all of that, but still, he's already said we're not going to have a war there. When Kerry says, we'll defend our NATO allies, what he means is, you're on your own, Ukraine. Sorry for getting you into this mess, but now, you know, tough for you, which is fine with me, I guess. It's better than, I wish they hadn't done the coup in the first place, but you understand. But, it seems like they've already cried uncle on the issue, which I agree with. But then, so what's the point of trying to pick a fight like that? Because it seems like that just makes it, Even if just a few percentage points, right, just makes it a little bit more likely that you will get a full-scale intervention in eastern Ukraine by Russia, maybe the whole country, and then we have to have this conversation all over again with a whole new set of very violent premises instead of what we're talking about right now, where things have been, you know, we can count the deaths on a couple of hands so far.
That's right. Well, we're entering, as a student of past crises, I can tell you, we're entering a phase where somebody said wonderfully about the war between Eritrea and Ethiopia over this completely useless, barren desert area. They said it's like two bald men fighting over a comb. And this is what's happening. Nobody gives a damn about it. In the West, nobody cares about Ukraine. As I said, it's a big liability. Its only use is to weaken Russia. But we're entering now where we are going to, when you hear the word prestige,
head for
your bomb shelter, because, and that's what's happening. The prestige of the United States is engaged against the prestige of the Russians and, of course, of the Western political leaders. Don't forget, we got humiliated in the Middle East by the Israelis. They're telling us to butt out. We've lost two wars now in Iraq and Afghanistan, back-to-back wars. So we're very prestige conscious. And we're doing violent and foolish things against the nuclear power so we're not called wimps. And, of course, the biggest sayers of this wimp word are the American Republicans. It has become a major political issue in the States. And I'm reading all these articles about Obama, get tough. Get tough and do what? You don't say things like that when you're kicking sand in the face of another nuclear power.
Right, especially when I mean, and I don't know every Republican who said this. Maybe Ted Cruz said it too. But what I saw was David Brooks, who, you know, you could knock out with an open hand slap, talking about how Obama doesn't have the manhood to see this thing through. Where, hey man, come on, dude. You're not quite macho enough, Brooks, to talk like that about the President of the United States. You can call him a lot of things, but less of a man than you, dude? No.
That's disgusting. Well, it's like George Bush trying to prove his machismo in Iraq, or George Bush's father, let's remember, who had to prove his machismo after Noriega in Panama called him a wimp. And he probably invaded Panama to show the nasty Noriega who was the bigger, tougher guy. This is something to be absolutely avoided in the course of political affairs. But that's just what we're happening now. And look, the Democrats are running scared. They feel they have to do something to show their machismo. All these awful right-wing Democratic women who are lusting for war, know nothing about war, but they're lusting for it, like Hillary Clinton and the Susan Powers in the UN and this Rice woman who's the National Security Advisor, are beating the war drums and giving the president very bad advice.
Yep, sure seems like it. All right, I better let you go. We're way over time here, but thank you very much for your time. It's always great to talk to you, Eric.
Cheers, Scott.
Appreciate it. That's the great Eric Margulies, everybody. I really need to get a three-hour show and do longer interviews. I'm tired of hanging up on everybody all the damn time. EricMargulies.com, LouRockwell.com, Uns.com. We'll be right back with Ramsey Baroud in just a sec. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Braswell Business Communication Services at FusePowder.com. Braswell Communications can provide a credentialed media presence for your company at industry conferences and trade shows, as well as support services and consultation for publishing, editorial and technical writing, business-to-business and marketing communications, research, and information campaigns. Braswell also does website development and complete web content maintenance to include voiceover audio and copywriting. Strengthen your business. FusePowder.com.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today, corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson, available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.